Testing 1, 2, 3 to see how we're coming in. This interview is for South Texas Oral History and Folklore Collection. The narrator is Mr. George W. Moore. The interview is being conducted by George E. Casso. Okay, we're going to start this interview with talking about Mr. Moore's early childhood experiences and his parents. And from there, we're going to go on to the second part of the teenage life experiences. And then for our final section, we'll go on to his transition into adulthood, his living in the country mostly. Okay, Mr. Moore, I need to know, some basic information about, where you were raised in your early life and about the size of the town.
I was born in Fort Worth, Texas. That's Terre County. That's in North Texas. I lived there 2 years and lived in Baytown, which at that time it was called Goose Creek. Now, then the Tri-Cities, now it's Baytown.
Okay, and from there, where did you move?
I lived there until I was 3, and I moved to Alena, which is now Highlands.
And in both of these towns, was your life actually more on the rural basis, or was it in the city?
Definitely. When I lived in, which is Baytown now, it was Goose Creek at the time, there was one show, a wood building, silent picture, one furniture store.
So you could label it as rural more than the city. It was a small village.
No stock law, horses and cattle running.
Okay, I need to know the local economic base. I mean, I imagine it was more agriculture than industry. Strawberries and figs was the main crop. The money crop.
But the main source was Humbleaugh, which is now Encore.
Oh, I see.
Going to Ensign.
How far out of town were the areas for the production of the oil?
9 miles from Baytown.
About 9 miles out of town. So did that make up a major source of the income for the town? I mean, were there a lot of workers out there, the larger part? And you said the rest was agriculture.
That's right. Oh.
Okay, I need to talk about your early school system. When did you first enter school? At what age?
Six years old.
What type of school was it? I mean, just the basic framework of the building. I mean, was it a church or a town hall?
We had two churches, the Methodist and Baptist. We went to school in the two churches.
Mm-hmm. You use the actual church houses.
That's all. Uh-huh.
And how about the size of enrollment? About how many fellow students did you have, and how were the classes arranged? Were they arranged in just large groups all together and teach the students individually, or was there separate rooms that you spend on different age groups?
Just one curtain went down the middle, and the kids were all taught together. In fact, you could throw the spitballs across the curtain.
Okay, how about your teachers? Do you remember anything specifically about your teachers? What impression did they put on you? Were they pretty strict? Or?
Most of them nice. Not too well educated. To me, now I wouldn't think they were.
You mean back then the
you could beat the heck
out of it. The requirements were a lot less than they are today. I mean,
that's right. Uh-huh. In fact, in the first grade, all I could think about was getting home to my horse and stuff like that, and I failed.
Out on the farm.
Yeah, and my mother went to the principal and talked him into giving me a chance at second grade.
Did you have any other problems with discipline besides that? One or two
instances. I almost got the principal fired. He liked to beat me to death for something I didn't do.
Could you elaborate a little bit on that?
Well, he said that I started the fight at the fighting place, which was water tower, we called it. It's a frame structure. But I was playing marbles on the schoolyard, waiting for a school bus. At the time the fight took place, and he liked to have beat me to death. He broke some fingers.
So you actually were innocent of what he accused
you? I could have had him fired. But and he had to apologize in front of the whole school.
In front of the whole school at a major assembly?
Major assembly. And it was up to me. But at that time, a teacher could spank your head, whip you with a stick.
It does sound quite a bit different from nowadays. There were no actual, I guess, laws regulating it. I mean,
not a thing.
Was it up to more or less the community itself for setting what they would allow the teachers to do?
It was more or less if the daddy was bigger and tougher than the teacher, he'd go down and beat the heck out of him.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't like
it. I see. Okay, how about your parents' background? I mean, we need to know about where your parents were raised and when they moved to where the area that you were born in, and what his major occupation was. How did he provide for his family?
You mean my father's parents first?
Well, just more or less about your father.
Well, my father was born in New Mexico.
About what year, approximately?
Let's see, he died in 1970. Mm-hmm. And let me see, he was 70 years old.
70 years old.
So, about all that I know of.
Right about the turn of the century, I guess.
When he was 14, his father was a sheriff, ran around with Billy the Kid and Pat Garrett and all of that bunch.
Did you hear much about that gang?
I saw the pictures. I've heard it so many times.
Your father would tell you a lot of stories about it?
My grandfather would.
Your grandfather?
Grandmother.
Mm-hmm.
And
Could they be considered actually friends of the family?
Was
it that close?
My grandmother has said that Billy the Kid has stayed all night at their house.
Mm-hmm.
And then that he had 7 sisters, no brothers. He had twin brothers, but they died at birth. And he raised his sisters. My grandfather gambled and just being a sheriff, rich today and broke the next day. And
he was a sheriff of the town.
My grandfather was.
Mm-hmm.
And he was just a mean man that I idolized. And
I can see that. Well, so how about your father's occupation?
He was at that time, the way he raised my sisters was doing ranch work, trying to go to school. I think he finished high school or close to it. And playing a fiddle and a French and juice harp at night at dances.
Oh.
So and he raised 7 sisters.
He did get enough education to become literate.
Well, he was a department head. And
enough to influence your education, to want you to go through an education in your family.
He was a department head at Umbelow when he died.
Okay, how about the size of your family? How many brothers and sisters did you have?
I have 2 older sisters and 2 younger.
And 2 younger. Okay, let's move on to health, the aspect of health back in those days. I mean, was there much more problems that y'all had with health you would now? I mean, how about the medical work back then? Was it, less efficient than it is today?
Unless polio or something like that, it was far more simple. All you have to do is get word, which we had no telephone or anything, to the doctor in Baytown, and he'd make his call. Maybe have to in a horse and buggy because it was dirt roads all the way. In fact, the babies were born at home.
Oh, imagine it get pretty bad in bad weather then. If there was bad weather during some type of epidemic or some immediate stress, if the roads were pretty bad, it'd be kind of hard for him to make it on time, I imagine.
No.
It wasn't like that?
It's a whole lot easier back then than now. Everyone had their own family doctor. And
a lot more courtesy from the doctors?
Everything. And if you had money, you paid. If you didn't, you didn't pay.
How about, would you pay a lot of times with crops or whatever you had?
Well, it's some people did. As I said, the 10 acres that we had was more or less a hobby for my two grandfathers that lived in our barn.
Mm-hmm. Okay, how about major epidemics? Can you remember a time that a large-scale epidemic broke out that a lot of people, got a hold of and suffered from?
Yeah,
that there was a major threat to the community?
Flu and colds and dysentery.
I'm talking about things actually worse than that, say, typhoid or something like that.
No.
That was easily easily
they
spread.
They took care of it better back then with amphogestine, mustard poultices, drinking kerosene and sugar.
Just homemade remedies, folk remedies.
And it seemed to me like it was just a whole lot better back then.
Uh-huh.
Now you almost have to go through Congress to find out what's wrong with you, because I know.
I agree with you. I agree with you in a lot of ways about that. Okay, we're going to have to pass on now to your teenage life experiences. Okay, could you just kind of give me a basic outline of what your teenage lifestyle was like? I mean, what did you do? What was your just daily, way of living? Your just day-to-day life existence. I mean, what exactly did you do from day to day?
Well, my teenage life started way before I was a teenager. I was 9 years old when, of course, you didn't have driver's license or anything like that then. No compulsory insurance. And I got the car when I was 9 years old. I was large for my age.
Mm-hmm.
We had a 1926.
There was no need actually for a license in those days.
There was no such thing.
If you could drive it, it was all right.
It was up to you.
Mm-hmm.
So I started out pretty early as a teenager, I'd say from 9 years up.
Mm-hmm. Okay, how about the forms of communication? I imagine it was a little bit more crude than communication is today. I know most people relied on radio instead of television, but just how crude was it? I mean, the communication, how could you communicate with a relative, say, 50 miles away?
Drive to Baytown 9 miles and hope you could get a line.
By that time, there was an established telephone line?
Well, you were lucky if you could call, I'd say, from Baytown to Fort Worth.
Wasn't it just a matter of time to open the line? I mean, you could do it within a day or two?
Yes, but it's the old-time ball telephone.
Uh-huh.
It was just lucky. In fact, at Baytown, which is a large city now, I remember our phone number in Baytown. It was 417J. I don't know why I remember it. Well, you talk to the operator. She done everything for you.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that was in Baytown, but you had to drive 9 miles, sometime in a horse and buggy.
Just to use the telephone?
Just to use the telephone.
There was no telephone system out in the country at that
time. That's right.
I see. So I guess that even affect the basic appearance of the countryside, because there was no telephone poles out there. Everything was still
just
forest land.
Our closest neighbor was around 2 miles.
I see. Okay, next I need to ask you about the basic dating practices. What was it like to date back in those days? How much different was it from today?
I suppose I was more lucky than most kids, being from a small town. This isn't bragging. On the Halloween carnival, I was king 3 times, and I think they call it prince. You sell chances, this and that. So I think I was spoiled, and my parents spoiled me and gave me a little bit too much money. So, and as far as the girls, there was the good and the bad. Just like now.
Just like today.
Just the only exception, instead of dope and marijuana, you had to steal your daddy's bootleg whiskey or raid the home brew.
Was it available in large quantities? I mean, could you raid his own personal stash all,
I can't anytime. Remember when anyone didn't have homebrew going. And all you have to do is walk about four blocks in a corn patch. I even know the lady's name that done the bootlegging, a Mrs. Crow.
At the time, was it against the law?
Well, definitely.
Definitely.
It was in the C-21.
25.
But as far as the good times and this and that, of course, we didn't know about television. Only the higher bracket people had radios. In fact, the first one we got, I must have been 4 years old, had ear sets for the whole family. And I think the radio would go off at about 9 or 10 o'clock at night.
That early.
But if you had that type radio, which was a Atwater Kent, I don't know if they even make them anymore or not, you were in the high bracket if you owned a car and a radio.
Okay, I'm going to get back again to the medicine practices. From the time you were an early child to the time you were a teenager, Do you recognize any advances in the medicine field? I mean, were they using any better drugs to treat certain ailments?
Well, I must
say, was it still mostly just the old folk remedies?
Old folk remedies, which I would still be for. The only thing I can see that has advanced medicine, well, I'll put it this way. All four of my sisters are still alive. My mother and father would be alive. But cancer got there.
And I see.
I think medicine was so far superior in those days, excluding the salt vaccine for polio. Mm-hmm. That's the major thing.
And penicillin. And possibly a few small
ailments. And the main thing now I can tell myself, because I take Valium myself. That's a tranquilizer. And I still think they should have just kept them off the market, all of them.
You really do?
I really do, because I've gone through it, because I've had this nervous condition since 64, I've been.
Do you feel that the old folk remedies would have cured your nervous condition better than the modern drugs?
Well, I won't say better than the drugs. I'll
Without
say better
as
than
bad, you know, bad effects.
No, the bad part is given there's so many medicines, I don't even think the doctors know what's good and bad.
I see.
Because I know one time in the Veterans Hospital, which I've been in there 7 times, they gave me, I was taking Christisone. That's a little stronger than penicillin. And they gave me too much. Well, till this day, I can't take penicillin or Christisone. In the old days, it didn't hurt if you took too much kerosene and sugar.
There's no chance of any type of overdose of drugs.
That's right. If you had a sore throat, your mother would put gauze on her finger, put raw iodine, and mop your throat. 2 days, you as well. Now, I'm not saying that the medicine is better now. I think it's being abused, which I know because I've taken every kind there is, every test, nearly every operation. And I'll take old days myself.
I see. Okay, we're going to get into the subject of the actual folk speech, of the language differences between now and then. I imagine with the new generation today, you really notice the changes of the folklore. But back then in your days, was there much of a difference from town to town, you know, of how people talk, as far as you could see?
The only way is if someone from the West Coast or from the North had come down. At that time, they were far superior to us. And
would they show it? Would they try to show it?
They showed it, and they had reason to, because we had no industry here. We had nothing.
I see.
The East Texas all Steel's Hip and Sheffield Steel and all the refineries here. And they'd laugh at us, and why, I know this more than the average. All of my father's folks, my cousins, I have dozens, I don't even know their names, that come down from California. And then on mother's side, they live from Wisconsin to New York. And so I learned the Yankee way and the West Coast renegade way.
Did you notice that their speech really did contrast with your country speech?
Definitely.
I mean, I imagine you had quite a few sayings that they didn't understand.
They'd laugh at me and I'd laugh at them.
It was a mutual thing.
Yeah, but we got along good. Oh. We lived better than they did.
Well, that's all that mattered, I guess. Okay, how about celebrations? I imagine back then, I imagine the community in certain ways were a lot closer than they were today. Do you agree with me on that?
Well, it's our biggest celebration when I was a young boy was,
yeah, in your teenage
was
life.
Night hunting with the hounds and this and that.
How large groups were they in these hunts?
Usually three or four men and the kids that could go. And barn dances and stuff like that.
How often did y'all have these dances?
Well, it depend on if the beer blew up or not, which it did quite often.
Okay, how about weddings? Were weddings a major event in those days?
No.
No more than today, you don't think?
Way less. Most time it'd just be...
They wouldn't make a big deal out of it.
No one had the money.
I see.
In my younger days.
From what I've observed just from reading about old, you know, weddings back in the 20s and 30s, it seemed that there was a larger gathering of friends than today. In most cases, was it like this? I mean, when any friend of yours got married, would they invite just about everybody they know?
No, just the closer friends. For example,
it was
my
pretty
family.
Small.
I have four sisters. They're all married. And of course I am, because I have two children. My one sister, 2 years older than me, she, her husband now, and I slipped off and they got married and kept it a secret for 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
But my wife and my other three sisters were all married at my mother's home.
Mm-hmm.
Which my sister bought after my mother and father died.
Right.
Were all married there. It was just a lots of drinking, and for the ones that wanted it, pay the preacher and have a good time.
What type of preacher was it? What religion?
I'm Methodist.
Was your whole family Methodist? Your father and mother, did you follow their religion?
Methodist. My wife is Baptist now, and the kids are.
So the actual immediate community, there wasn't much difference from person to person. I mean, everybody more or less went to one church or the other. There wasn't any sort of off-brand religion.
Well, apostolics were in it. The only churches we had, Baptist, Methodist, and we call them apostolics. I think you call it something else now.
Was there any discrimination on on the other's parts towards them?
There was no trouble, no racial trouble, no nothing.
That really sounds ideal to me.
It was heaven back then.
Okay, well, now that we're talking about religion, I'd like to stay on the subject for just a while. What were the church meetings like back then, compared to today? I mean, there must have been some major differences.
Well, it's in my childhood, it was more or less the churches, since it was during the Depression, was helping the less fortunate, and the fortunate trying to help them. They called it the Welfare League.
Right, a lot of brother
right.
Welfare.
Anyone that helped people. Anybody.
Anybody that needed help
that's
could
right.
could look towards the church for giving
you
them
could
help?
Get, well, not just the church, the church members, our neighbors.
Mm-hmm. That sounds beautiful. It does. How much did the people actually observe their church rules? I mean, was it pretty consistent with the dogma of the church, or did people kind of go behind the church's back in some instances, you know, towards drinking, say?
Well, I can recall that at least 90% or 95% of the people that would come to our house, Daddy, my father, I've never called him father, Daddy,
mm-hmm.
Always kept a large supply of beer, homebrew, I think you call it.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, we had 2 10-gallon crocks.
How about other hard liquors? Was there, you know, any...
You'd have to buy that from bootleggers.
I see.
But you could buy it for, I think, $1 for a pint.
It was easy to find. I mean, you could go out any time and locate.
Sure. But I've never seen a Baptist, Methodist, or Apostolic turn down a bottle of beer in our house.
Even though the basic, you know, the basic principles of those religions do specify, especially Baptists,
against
drinking, but it was accepted by the church majority.
And still is. It's still their bylaw. My wife being a Baptist, and she'll drink an occasional beer or highball.
Okay, I want to move on to the town structure of the day. How far out from the town did you actually live? I think you mentioned 2 miles, is that correct?
No, that was between houses, two mm-hmm. towns.
How far did you live from the actual town?
I'd say 4.5 miles.
Okay, how large was the town in the area?
We had an area, I'd say, equivalent to Corpus today.
Oh, that large?
That large, but scattered.
Highly scattered.
In fact, everyone knew how many chickens everyone had. In fact, you knew everybody by their first name. We had one store. It was post office, feed store.
A bank?
No such thing as a bank.
No such thing as banking.
It's one in Baytown.
And what would people do with their money? Would they just keep it at their own location?
You didn't have to worry about keeping your money because it was spent as fast as you'd get it.
How about the credit system? Was there quite a bit of credit allowed in the town? I mean, you know, so that you could work out your crop system, you know, to get your loans when you needed them and then pay off when your crops came to their full growth.
Your groceries could be delivered if you wanted them delivered. You paid when you could and wanted to. If you couldn't, at the store owner, which was Mr. Chandler.
Mm-hmm.
He owned everything that was sold in the town that I'm speaking of, Valina, Highlands now.
Mm-hmm.
And if you had hard luck, he'd carry you for 2, 3, 4, or 5 years.
Oh, that far?
That far.
That far.
Unless he thought you was trying to beat him. Of course, mm-hmm. you or anyone will cut anybody off like that.
I see what you mean. How about the actual lifestyle at that time in the towns? I mean, did people situate themselves around their business mostly, or was there a lot of extra activity, you know, at the bars?
There was no such thing as a bar.
Mm-hmm.
You'd go to homes. There was no taverns because beer and all was illegal. They
right.
could put you in jail right. for I mean, making
did,
home
Did you
beer.
Have your speakeasies, though, that you
Nothing
could,
like that.
No, there wasn't?
Of course, you had wild girls, just like you do now. It hadn't changed.
Uh-huh.
My daddy told me it when he was a boy, and grandpa, our grandfather, told me that when he was a boy. It's the same.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing, people are more in the open now, and I've seen it happen. And
was there any particular problem with prostitution or anything related to that?
Well, it's
that y'all had in the town that you know may had been, you know, brought to the local courts?
No, not the courts or anything, because at that time, if you I think the correct pronunciation now is a venereal disease. We called it venereal disease. Uh-huh. At that time, if you, well, for example, would get syphilis in advanced stage, all the doctor could do was let
on the previous slide, we were talking about the situation with prostitutes back in the old days. And Mr. Moore says that there was some type of problem back then, especially with venereal diseases. Now, would you go on and to elaborate on that subject and mention the, you know, the remedies used?
I won't call them prostitutes. I'll call it good neighbors. Because I can recall three, I could name the names now, I'd rather not, where the husbands were shot. In a way, that is prostitution, because I'm sure they was giving them gifts or this and that. And as far as the cure back then, I think they had no cure for gonorrhea, I believe is the right word. Definitely nothing for syphilis.
And what was the cure that you just previously mentioned?
Well, it's... Well, I was lucky. My father told me the facts of life when I was just a young boy, barely in school, what to do and how to do it. Now, I don't mean what you think I mean. I mean prevention. And so I don't really know what medicines they had, which I'll say turpentine, squalol, or kerosene.
They were limited, though.
They had hardly drugs of any kind back then.
So what would they do at times? What would the doctor do?
It would just be a long, drawn-out cure of some way. I don't know what medicine, because I've never had a disease. But syphilis, I do know there was no cure for it at that time.
So what would they do at times? Would they just let them rot away, or was there any
just what I've heard. I was a young boy at the time that they would eventually go crazy, and I have heard of doctors leaving a gun on the desk and let them shoot themselves. And the only time that I've learned, after I went in the service, about venereal disease, is I was at Eastport, Maine. That's on the Bay of Fundy, right across from Canada. Penicillin was invented and used in private practice, but sulfur drug is all that the Army or Navy would use. Anyone that got venereal disease was put in isolation, his paycheck stopped, the ones that were married, definitely their wife would know why. And sulfur drug and Oramycin is all they had.
So it was fairly limited compared to that.
Now that was in 43. And that's really all I know about the cures of venereal disease.
Okay, now how about, I know there must have been some compared to in your day, I imagine there was some good amount of money somewhere in some businesses in town. Now, can you remember any instances of trouble that y'all had, like, say, robberies or fights or shootouts, over money, during the hard times especially, or was it a pretty peaceful town?
It was peaceful. About the only things that really happened was people stealing chickens and watermelon. And of course, that's when you had your Dillingers and Hamiltons and, it was bank robberies back then, and that's about all there was.
Do you remember any particular instances of these bank robberies taking place?
Well, just reading about them, there was...
Not in your town, just other towns.
Just about the most excitement was a hunting accident or a man catching his wife with somebody else in a good shooting.
In a shootout, huh? Okay, how about race relations? What were the race set up, you know, the actual spread of the race in your town?
Well, it's my mother and daddy, since they both worked, we've always had colored girls helping from 1 to 2 all of my life. And, well, they worked for $5 in room and board. And the way my parents and I would talk to them, if they wanted to say they were better than us, that was fine. And I said, if I want to feel better than you, I'll keep it to myself, and that's fine. And we got along just perfectly.
Well, that's good.
And
it sounds really
good. I'm not saying that was the right way. It was the only way at that time. A colored person would call a 2-year-old miss or mister. And again, I'm not saying that was right, but that's the way it was.
That's just the way it occurred.
But we got along good. It was no trouble any way or nothing.
Okay.
I do want to add that they were abused as far as prejudice at getting jobs and school and hardships.
But compared to most other towns, especially in the Deep South, say Mississippi and Louisiana, you say that the Negroes in your area were treated pretty fairly?
Oh, yeah.
And not abused?
We got along better with them, and why I know, as I've said, all of my daddy's father's sisters live on the West Coast. So I've made trip after trip out there, and it was the only trouble with the colored people was the southern colored people that would go there, or when I'd go north, like the La Crosse, Wisconsin, it was the southern niggers or Negroes. I shouldn't have said that.
No, that's okay.
But used to, it was a common word. It was the southerns that went up north or to the West Coast. We call them West Coast renegades. I still tease about it. That caused the trouble. Even in the service, your main trouble was your southern colored persons that caused the trouble. It wasn't the northern or the western Negro that died.
I want to know your actual feelings. Do you look down in a way, are you turned off by people who do have racial discriminations, who do feel like all Negroes should be persecuted and given a hard time?
I think
because they are inferior.
I don't believe they're inferior. I do believe on a whole that they've been neglected to an extent that they haven't caught up. And I've been for the colored person all of my life. In fact, some of my best friends are colored people because I've worked with them and this and that. But I'm definitely against this demonstrations and this and that, because you can just drop your hat. In the last 2 years, I've turned against them. I still like the friends that I have, but they're going too far. They want more than their share. Now, I'm not speaking of the average colored person. I'm speaking of the societies that want to march, demonstrate. And
You're referring in a way to Black Panther groups or groups like that who are radical in their
ways.
Do you think that they are harming their
self,
race?
Their own self.
Do you think they're harming the overall race at the same time instead of bettering it?
I think so. I think they're jeopardizing their chances to continue progressing, which they've done wonderful in 20 years, the last 20.
Would you support advocates of racial equality like Martin Luther King, King?
To the extent, unless they bring in intermarriage. I don't think it would be fair to the white or the dark, whether it's Japanese. Well, I just don't think it'd be right to have a dark sister and a white sister or brother. And someday, I imagine it will be intermarriage and such.
You something that the time is not right just yet.
The time isn't right. And the
white there still people, is prejudices in society.
I think that, more that so with the colored than the whites. Mm-hmm. The colored, well, like on your busing and all, they're mm-hmm. more against that than we are. The ones I know and have talked to.
Okay, now I want to move on to just as we're getting out of your teenage life and into your adult life. I want to know, what's your overall, have you had any overall impressions of your experiences that really can come to your mind right now, of your teenage life that you know, made it overall enjoyable, that you can remember?
I've made it the point to make everything enjoyable, from getting money on my daddy's credit card since I was 9 years old, up till I left home, which the first time I was 16 years old. And I've worked all my life. I've been lucky. So I can't really speak for the average person, which I'm poor now. I draw Social Security and a pension. Mm-hmm. And my wife makes a small salary.
Okay, into this transition into your adulthood, where did you actually, you know, get the choice of your occupation that you finally chose? I mean, was it just inbred from your father to you, or was it just something you acquired on your own?
As I have discussed before, during the Depression, instead of Umble Oil, which my father worked there, he was a journeyman sheet metal worker, instead of laying half or two-thirds of the men off, they cut them to 2 and 2.5 days a week. And my daddy, being a journeyman sheet metal worker, taught me the trade. I knew it when I was 15, good enough to get my journeyman card before I was 19.
And you actually got the card, the certification, when you were 19?
Before I was 19.
Before you were 19.
I went overseas after Pearl Harbor. I was 19 or just barely old.
Okay, let's get in. Now you were already an adult when the Second World War actually started. Now, I need to know some of your impressions towards the war. What were your feelings when you first heard about Pearl Harbor and when it broke out? Were you in a state of fear, or were you in a state of instant hatred? I mean, did you feel that we ought to conduct an all-out war on the Japanese, or were you pretty mixed up in a way?
No, if it's anyone that I knew, the only thing they could think of was doing something to help, which I myself had already promised Pacific Naval Air Bases that I would go to Wake Up. That was in October of 1941. And there was no such thing as a conscientious objector. The only one I can recall now was Lou Ayers. That's the only reason I won't watch his films now, is because he plays these hero war pictures mm-hmm. and such. But I understand the conscientious objectors of today.
You think it is a totally different situation?
I think I may would be one myself, unless it should be. Unless it should be all-out war.
I see what you mean. At the time when war broke out, did you feel that you should give yourself immediately for your country? I mean, did you feel that you had a job to do at the time? Yeah. And do you feel that the overall feeling in society was this?
I know of no one that didn't join or try to join or do as I did, go overseas and work, which I was in the war zone for almost 2 years mm-hmm. as a civilian. In mm-hmm. fact, it took me 2 months to get in the service when I came home, because they said I was needed back in the islands as a journeyman rigger and armor.
Okay, related with the Second World War is depression. Now, I need to know basically, how your family, your immediate family, made it through the Depression? I mean, were y'all in a state of deprivation, or did you think you lived a good life throughout the Depression?
In the small town that we lived in, I would say there were four or five families that lived some better than we did, which I've said my father made $1 an hour, 2.5 days a week, by having our own beef and pork and vegetables, which my grandparents raised and butchered. Mm-hmm. I lived better then than when my mother finally was making $2,200 in real estate, average a month, not counting my father's.
Okay, the state of your town during the Depression, do you feel that you were doing a little better than the rest of them, or was more or less the entire community living all right, you know, like
no,
y'all?
No, most of them were real poor. They lived on welfare during the Depression part, but no one went hungry or nothing like that.
Well, that's good.
I just had a lucky family.
Okay, now I want to get into weather extremes. In your young life, say all the way from your early childhood to your adult life, when you were raised here in Texas, do you remember any instances of say hurricanes or tornadoes or something like that, strong rains that threatened your family?
I can. One in particular, let's see, my younger sister wasn't born. My other sister at that time, my youngest sister, must have been 18 months old or something like that. Well, they were four of we kids then, and we could just catch one horse, and it'd been raining about 4 days. My father couldn't get home from Baytown at work, and water was coming in the house. That's
how long had it been raining?
I'd say around 4 days, because water was coming in the house and we had to get out. My mother put we four kids on this old, we called it Sore Head because it had a sore on its head. Its real name was Dolly. But we called her Sore Head. Mm-hmm. Four kids, and my mother waded breast deep water, holding on to the horse's tail, and we went around 3 miles to high ground.
Can you remember being very frightened?
Oh, definitely.
Very frightened at this time?
No,
did you think that
it was more or less, I can answer that with the question you asked me a while ago about the war excitement. It's anxiety, not being scared.
In a way, you could release a lot of your
That's
emotions.
Right. It's, in fact, an adventure. For the younger people, now it'd be a catastrophe to go through what I have gone through.
Right. How about droughts? Did y'all suffer being farmers from any droughts in the Texas area?
Again, we didn't depend on 10 acres for a living. It didn't hurt us one bit. But it hurt
the large farmers.
Hurt them bad.
I see. Okay, how about the industry in your area? Did y'all get any rapid building of industries during your childhood or teenage years?
There was
nothing. Or did you stay agriculture?
There was nothing in the South at that time. Umbalal is about the only refinery. We had no steel mills. We had no car assembly plant. In fact, we were more or less like you'd look at the wilds of Africa or parts of Brazil or Australia.
That much.
As now.
Okay, I'm getting towards the close of this tape. I want you to give me an impression that you have now of the rapid changes that have taken place. Nobody can deny these changes. They're all around us. But I was wondering, how about the changes in society? Do you feel that we're going towards the better or for the worse?
I definitely think that the good days are gone as far as happiness and routine life, but if they can stamp out the drug problem and definitely control crime a little better, I think it will be a little better than the old days.
Is that because of all the modern conveniences that we have today?
And
the control that we feel over our lives now?
That's right. But anyone that owned a hand washing machine in my day, you were an aristocrat or a plutocrat. But I myself wouldn't trade my life and the way I lived it for today's life for anything in the world.
You mean for your young life, you would not trade that for any youngster's life today, especially in the city?
That's right. Mm-hmm. Well, it's in the country now, too.
Okay, ooh, what can you say that would actually sum up your feelings of your past life? I mean, I want to know if the overall impression that you remember now is something of a pleasantry, or is it something of hardship?
I never think of the hardship.
You never were aware of it at the time?
The only thing I worry about is worrying about something to worry about.
Well said. So, you remember your past life, your early childhood and your teenage life as one of being quite pleasant, one of having it made in a way, even though you weren't rich in any way, but you were rich in that you had a good family.
We lived it
up. You lived it up.
And still do. Mm-hmm. Stay broke, but eat good.
But eat good and enjoy yourself. Okay, well, one other thing I want to get into is your feelings now about about other races and just other people different from you. You have mentioned that you never did have anything against the Negro.
Up till the past 2 or 3 years, I'm definitely against.
How about other races, say the Chicano race here in South Texas? What are your feelings now as an adult towards Chicano movements?
I'll put it this way. The best people I know are Japanese people, which at the time of war, I was definitely against them.
And were you went ahead and went against them at the time of the war, like society did?
Suppose so.
Did you support the movement of most of the Japanese people in California to the concentration camps or the slight concentration camps they put them into in central United States?
Well, they ate in the same mess hall, the prisoners did, that we ate in. Ate the same food,
mm-hmm.
But it was.
Well, I know their treatment wasn't anything like a communist concentration camp, but it was something less than what they had. But do you support this? Do you think that was a good move to move them in there for the security of the United States?
Well, it simplified the way I looked at the Germans, which when I was just a kid, if you wanted to curse somebody, call them a German or a devil.
It was the same thing.
The same thing. But I realize now that it wasn't the people, it was the government.
Mm-hmm.
The people are no different than you or me.
I see. So there's no hatreds in your mind now for the people. I mean, you would accept a German or a Japanese now into your house and say, have a conversation that you could sit down and talk to them as a human being?
I would accept the colored person in my house. The only thing, I don't believe in intermarriage. That's as far as it goes.
I see. Okay, now in our closing, I want to get into one other thing. Throughout this interview, you have related to me a strong sense of humor that you've had since your early days. Now, sure, this is carried on probably from your family. They must have had their own humor.
We lived it together all our life.
What can you say about the humor of the old days of your young life and the humor of today? What type of changes have taken place, and how do you view these changes?
Well, in my younger years, you live to live. Have a good time. Now, you live to
without
see where you're going
to... else?
That's right. And you're... Today, you live to see if you can keep up with the Joneses and who in the heck you're going to beat tomorrow.
Are you against that?
I think it's the only way that you can get by in this day and time.
Do you think you ought to compete with your neighbor?
No, not necessarily compete with your neighbor, but Well, for example, getting a loan at the bank or this and that, you have to put up false pretense. Or
but you, in other words, you can't, you think that in today's life, in today's modern life, you, in a way, you can't help but compete. The way that society is structured today.
I'll simplify it in my mind. In my younger days, a Christian, a good Christian, could live 90% Christian and 10% on your home brew, if you want to simplify it.
And, well said.
And vice. Today, even the best Christian has to live 50, 60, or 70% for society if he's to feed his family good and clothe them, and 30, 40, or 50% for the Lord. Now, I'm not saying that's right, it's the way it is, because I know Baptists, I know Catholics, and I know them all, and they're all, everyone, excluding no one, that's you, me, my wife, my children, you live in the eyes of society more so than for the Lord or your own beliefs.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. Now, in closing, you sound sort of like a religious person, even though you might not be affiliated with organized, structured religion.
I believe in it.
Do you feel that... Go ahead.
I believe in the Lord. I believe in most of the Bible. But why I quit going to church 15 years ago, it isn't the Bible. It isn't the preachers. It's a congregation. It just almost turns my stomach every time I go in to church. Even though I'll go to a beer joint after seeing the people that curse people that do it and see them in the speakeasies or whatever you may call them.
You think, in other words, there's just too much hypocrisy?
I say my prayer at home and let my wife do the church going.
I see. Okay. Well, I think this will conclude our interview. I really want to thank you for the interview. I think it was a well-done interview, and I think that many students from now, you know, throughout the years, for the next 10, 20 years, will benefit from this conversation, because you have given us quite a good view of the life.
Well, since someone...
the life back in the old days. Now, in our summary, can you give us just an overall impression of yesterday's life compared to today's life?
Today's life is as good as yesterday's life. If you can think fast enough now, and out can I, people. In the old days, you didn't have to. Now you have to think fast.
Did you enjoy it more in the old days when you wouldn't have to compete?
Well, definitely, because it was if you wanted adventure, just... you could get it now. You'll get picked up and put in jail if you even hitchhike someplace. But I did want to say one more thing. As I've told you, I draw Social Security and pension. In my speech, I have emphysema. And it is hard to talk as far as I breathe.
Well, I think you have done a good job. And we thank you.